Welcome to Born to Know, the podcast that invites you to unlearn what you've been taught and step into a deeper, more expansive truth about what's really possible. In today's episode, I sit down with Samanvaya Joshi, a quantum healing hypnosis technique practitioner whose work dissolves the boundaries between past, present, and future. Together, we explore hypnosis not as entertainment, but as a sacred portal into the subconscious where healing, memory, and meaning converge. What if your chronic patterns or physical pain are echoes from long, long ago? What if your inner child still speaks through your nervous system? Can we access memories from the womb or even before conception? Through Sam's stories and insights, you'll hear how past life regression, pre-birth recall, and soul level inquiry can help open profound pathways to empowerment. This conversation challenges conventional models of medicine, psychology, and even spirituality. We question the constructs of heaven and hell, reimagine life after life, and examine how hypnosis can help rebuild trust, heal trauma, and reveal the deeper why behind your life. This conversation makes it really clear that one soul always knows the way. Thank you, Sam, for being here.
Absolutely, and thank you for having me on your show. Wonderful to be here.
We met back in January earlier this year, and I had come across a book by Dr. Brian Weiss, which I had heard of it, and I'd never read it, but I started reading it in December, shortly after I had kind of been in inquiry about different things, and nothing for me is coincidence, nothing is an accident. And so I came across the book, and then I was inspired and very curious and felt compelled to look for Brian Weiss online and see if I could connect with him, which proved not to be fruitful because he's retired and but then I found other things and came across your website and your work and the hundreds and hundreds of testimonials from people from all over the world, it seems, that have worked with you and undergone this transformative process, which once I made the connection with you and I did the work with you, I realized, it's the way that people described it made so much sense because it's incredibly subtle. It's like it's not tactile, you can't really quite place it. All you know is that things are unfolding and transforming in a way that they hadn't before. It's undeniable. So I would say it's subtle, it's also very profound. And so I just wanted to open with that experience, and I'm totally okay sharing bits of my experience if it seems appropriate at any point in our conversation. But in the months that have unfolded after our work together, I really wanted to speak with you and explore the subject matter, because since then, I've shared bits with some people who've asked. I don't give too much information because I feel like it starts to like maybe impact their perception of this work. But I just say, like, I don't talk about the process so much as I talk about the outcome of what I've experienced. And so I would love for you to share what hypnosis is, right? Such a broad term. And the work that you do, because I know many people that I've even shared it with said, oh, like in the movies where they make you do things that you wouldn't otherwise do if you were conscious. And I'm like, no, it's nothing like that. So I would love to just unpack that.
Yes. So as you rightly said, hundreds of people have gone through this process. This is a profound process. And every human being is unique. There are no two human beings, even if they are twins. They might be similar, but everything about them will be unique because we come with our own unique karma. In the East, we call it karma. In the West, we call it database or memories or past or whatever we want to call it. And whatever is needed, whatever is appropriate for that unique human being happens through this process. And that is why The QHHT, Dolores Cannon's QHHT process, which we do, which is quantum healing hypnosis technique, it is essentially a spiritual process. It is not a psychological process. Psychological means going back linearly, going back in the past, saying, you know, you're 10 years old, you're now in your mother's womb, and directing the process or controlling the process. In the kind of work that we do, we means QHHT practitioners all over the world, we never control the process. We never control or manipulate or direct as to where the client goes. It is your higher self, that connection with divinity, God, superconsciousness, which takes you wherever you need to be to bring yourself that healing, clarity and wisdom, whatever is appropriate. And that is why it is a spiritual process. It is beyond you and me. Now, of course, you know, most people, they wonder hypnosis. Hypnosis is just a tool, a technique, a small part of the entire process. It is in this spiritual process that the hypnosis is a small part. And the hypnosis comes in where? Just to relax the what we call as the left brain or the analytical thinking, logical, calculative, strategic mind. That mind which we use for a survival on a daily basis. But when it comes to a spiritual process, survival, we are now transcending survival. We are transcending the five senses. So what we are doing is, in one way, using this beautiful, gentle hypnosis that Dolores Cannon has developed, we relax that analytical part of the mind. And at the same time, in that same relaxation, you are also touching what we call as the conscious mind or the superconscious. And it is right in the middle of that superconscious and completely relaxed, what we call as the somnambulistic state, which is the gray area where all the work happens. So if you really ask, it is within the same moment that you're super aware, at the same time you're super relaxed. For most human beings, being in both the states at the same time is very difficult or is nearly impossible. But it is the hypnosis or the QHHT process that makes it possible. So on one level, it is a very deep relaxation. On the other level, it is so gentle that most people wonder that, no, Sam, my mind was active. Am I really under hypnosis? You are absolutely. Once you decide to go into the process, you get beautifully connected. Whatever work needs to happen, happens. The only time that, you know, somebody may ask, oh, but what if, you know, I cannot get hypnotized? It is not whether you can get hypnotized or not. Unless you decide not to get hypnotized, only then nothing can happen. Because at any given time in our lives, we are always exercising free will. So if somebody, and I have yet to meet that kind of a person, because people pay big bucks to come and be with me and do this process. So unless somebody doesn't want to get hypnotized, they won't be paying the money. So it has, you know, never happened. And I'm sure that sometimes, you know, the left brain or the analytical mind creeps in and wants to have a little control over the process. It is very natural. It happens sometimes and it goes on. But I don't know if I answered your question about hypnosis.
You did. And what you said, that, you know, that piece about, I don't know if I want to get hypnotized, and people, you know, why would people go and do this work and invest, you know, the resources and energy if they don't? But I think, like, personally speaking, I felt this sense of, you know, am I hypnotizable, right? That's like what the question was that I asked myself, you know, am I able to reach that state of deep relaxation? And, you know, someone who's grappled with the idea of, or that sensation of control, right, in my life, there is a surrender that happens because you have to surrender to this process. And so there's this kind of holding on of, like, what will I find once I get to that state of deep relaxation? And am I ready to see what I will find, you know? And I think that's, you know, and I've talked to other people that's what comes into play. So it's not so much a, do I really want to? It's more like, am I capable of, and am I willing to see what's there?
It is, you're absolutely right. Am I willing? And am I willing for what? Am I willing to really meet the real me who has been waiting, that inner child who has been waiting for you to make that contact? And for whatever reasons, it could be that people have gone through a traumatic past and, they have learned over the years with the left brain to maintain control. So most people, we feel fearful of letting go and losing control, because we feel that the moment we lose control, then hell will break loose. And again, people will take advantage of me. Or if I let go of those walls, then if I start trusting, then what can happen? So in a way, we feel vulnerable, but it is actually the more vulnerable you become to yourself, you actually open up to divinity by standing out of your own way. And who is this standing out of the way? These are the identifications, or what in, we generally call as the ego mind. The ego mind, when channeled in an appropriate way, can be your best friend. Ego is not at all, the bad guy that we point fingers at. No, without the ego, you and me would not be talking today. We wouldn't be conducting our business. We wouldn't want to do anything in life. Yet when we get identified with that ego, when we don't maintain that distance, then we get lost in it, and that creates suffering and pain. So for that time of that process, if you can come to that equanimity within yourself that it is okay, I am going to be in the best company. And which is that best company? That is me. Nobody else. If you can come to that realization, even for a moment, then the higher self will do whatever it needs to. The left brain will keep questioning it. The left brain is meant to be like that. Skeptical, analytical. Oh, am I really under hypnosis? Is this working? Is this good for me? Will I be able to get hypnotized? All those questions will come. And they are appropriate questions. They are relevant. And yet, as you slowly, in increments, start surrendering, things happen beautifully.
So now my mind is going to different places, because, I would first love to hear how you came into this work. We all have different arcs. We have these bigger arcs in life and then these kind of smaller arcs, and that's the way that I see it. And so I'd love to know how you came into this work, with Dolores Cannon and this path.
It's a very funny story, and I'll tell you why it is funny. So my formal initiation into spirituality happened in 2007. But since I was a child, I was always experimenting with pyramids and paranormal. At that time, we had very less resources. We didn't have the internet. So it was just some library books. And even in India, where I come from, those resources were very few. And then we came to this country, whatever, we were going through the roller coaster ride. We were making lots of money, more money than I could even spend. And one day, an enlightened being came in our life. His name is Sadhguru. And we started our formal spiritual journey. So from 2000 until 2007, until about, when did we meet Dolores? Dolores came into our lives in 2019. So one day, whatever was happening, and my then wife Shoma, so she was on the internet and she was looking at stuff. She found Dolores Cannon. So she came and approached me and she said, oh, you should look at this. I said, please, I don't want one more spiritual process. I have done enough for the last 15, 17 years. Please spare me of it. So, but because she suggested, I reluctantly looked at it. Then one thing led to another, and she wanted to learn the QHHT process. So we went to Atlanta. I was just driving her. So I used to be at the Airbnb. I used to drop her in the morning, pick her up in the evening. This went on for about 3 or 4 days. I think on the 4th or 5th day, I said, can you do this hypnosis for me? I'm also very excited. But she was not excited about it at all. She was not even enthusiastic. Then I had to kind of, you know, say, come on, you know, I wait at home for you every day and, you know, you're not doing this for me. And somehow she reluctantly did it. 15 minutes into the process, I could hear that I thought that she was crying. So I was wondering, did I say something wrong? But she had told me, keep your eyes closed until the end of the session. Once the session was over, I asked her, what happened? She said, you won't believe it. Everything that you were telling me was what I saw in my session 7 hours ago, earlier in the morning. And then she told me the story as to why she was so reluctant about doing the process for me. Because that morning, they had formed groups, I think, of 3 people. Everyone who had come to the program to learn this process. And they were supposed to try it on each other. And when it came to Shoma's turn, she was lying flat. Somebody else, her colleague, was doing the process for her. And in the middle, she thought that she was not under hypnosis, that she was making all this stuff up. She was just imagining stuff. So she got up frustrated. She was probably angry that, you know, why did I waste this time of my husband? And why did I, you know, even invest this money? And this is all useless. It's not working. And when she came home and when she did the process on me, she said that what you were telling me, what you were seeing with your eyes closed, is what I saw this morning. And that was a sudden, like, you know, I mean, it was such a big validation for her that the process is working. This is wonderful. Amazing. She went the next day. She went and very happily did the process with her colleagues again. Then when she came back home, she said, now this time I want to do it on you again. Again, when I went down, whatever I was seeing, whatever I was telling her was what she had seen the next day also. And that is when it shook us from the core that how can this even be possible? That is when we understood that it was her higher self and my higher self probably collaborating to show us how profound this process is. Then she ended up telling me that, you know, yes, I am attending the course, but really speaking, every time I'm sitting out there, I feel that, you know, it is meant for you. You are supposed to do this. So by the time her course was done, I joined it, I took it up, and since then, I've been doing this full time. So it is not just whoever the listener may be, that every one of us, though why I told you about a little about my past is because before even learning this process, for about 10 years, or more than 10 years, I had been full-time, 24/7, into spirituality. And I was learning all these tools and techniques of trusting, letting go, being vulnerable, everything. So was Shoma. And yet, when it came to our time, that left brain was being skeptical. Is this really going to work? Can I be hypnotized? So it happens to all of us. And yet when we let go, the higher self connects and does whatever it needs to do in the most wonderful, profound ways that we cannot even imagine, that we cannot even think are logical or reasonable. So that is how I came into QHHT. In a way, it was not my doing. I had never thought that I would be a QHHT practitioner. I never thought of even doing this ever. But when it is the right time and when you're willing, the universe brings it in ways that are unimaginable. So I am very fortunate that it happened. And I think it was a gift from Shoma to me. So I'm very grateful to her also for introducing me into this, which I now do full time.
I mean, I will say that my partner and I did this one day apart. We each had a session one day apart. And afterward, when he recounted his experience and what he wanted to share, my jaw dropped, because a lot of the visuals that he experienced and thing, you know, messages that he got were so much overlapped with what I saw. I mean, specific details, you know, I just to go into it now would take forever. But yeah, it was really, truly remarkable, you know, to see. And I said, how is it possible? Because I didn't write it anywhere. I didn't share it anywhere. I didn't talk about it. And so when he shared his experience, I was just looking over at him kind of shocked, like, how did we, two unique individuals who didn't converse about this, have the same experience, you know, and the way it was perceived as well. Yeah.
This idea of being two unique individuals, we come with these blinders so that we can have individual experiences in this reality. But as quantum physics is, you know, showing it everywhere, that we are all connected. And when we are connected, we are picking up everything from the collective consciousness, what we in the East call the Akashic. The Akashic is, in one small way to describe it, is the common library of all records of everything that has happened in life, that will happen, has happened, and is happening. So when one is willing, all these things, they either mingle up or they are anyway one, they are not mixing up. Everything is there. It is just that we make ourselves available to be able to access that information, and not just access it in a haphazard way where it just comes cascading down on you, where that librarian, whether you call it your higher self or God or divinity, chooses the appropriate records that you need in this time, which can be revealed to you.
I want to touch on what you said about, you know, you brought up the word skepticism, because there were certainly two or three people I spoke with, and, you know, things that I was reading online where people say that this is contradictory to religious beliefs, and that this is all the act of a desperate person who's just wishful and hopeful to find something. And this was kind of moving, you know, kind of maybe into a realm that butts up with religious beliefs. And so, you know, I wanted to ask you that, because I've heard medical doctors, right, who have a very specific kind of training, you know, psychiatrists, psychologists, neurosurgeons, all different types of practitioners who work in the medical field say, like, I can't really quantify this. All I know is that it had a profound effect on me. And so how important is it that someone actually has to believe in this for it to have an effect on someone's life? Because I don't necessarily need to believe in something for it to prove, you know, for me to have an experience with it, right? And I don't feel like I need to ascribe to something or to be part of something for it to have an impact on my life. You know, I'm personally someone who can take information from so much of the richness and the textures of the world to create my experience. So if someone's considering it, but they're skeptical, right? What would you say to that?
Yes, I would say, number one, skepticism is good. Skepticism is good because a lot of damage has been made on this planet by believers. When you blindly believe something, I wouldn't go with that. If you're skeptic, then you will at least look at it for what it is. And once it becomes your experience, When it is your experience, it becomes undeniable to you. Let your see, the first step is skepticism. Okay, you know, I don't know whether this hypnosis works or not. Maybe you read a few reviews. You say, okay, maybe, you know, these are all people who have been blinded and, you know, they simply wrote this review. They are just, you know, saying all these nice things. Then comes a point when something within you, what we call as your intuition, your gut feeling, your heart, your connection with divinity guides you in a certain way. And that is when, see, I have so many people, okay, I'll tell you, there's a lot of people who call me and they will be very straight and upfront with me. They will tell me, Sam, I don't know who you are. I don't know what this past life regression thing is, but something has just kept pointing me towards this. And I don't know why. And that is why I'm making this call. See, please understand, on one side, their entire mind is telling them that this is madness. If you don't know what this is about, why should you even be making this call? And yet when they transcend that logical reason, reasonable thought or what their mind is cooking up, and they make the call, by the time they connect, things start happening, they start feeling. When it becomes your experience, it becomes undeniable. Once it becomes your experience, then you are able to believe in that experience. Even people who come here and they do the session, even after the session, on one side, something is, they know that something is happening. There has been some transformation which has occurred, and yet the mind kicks in because the mind is always trying to establish its relevance. Because it is in charge of your survival, it's still trying to understand, but it will never be able to understand this. It will never be able to grasp this because we are going beyond the five senses. The mind can understand only the five senses of tasting, touching, hearing, smelling, and seeing. Beyond that, when we are going from the physical to the non-physical dimension, there the mind, it is just lost. And if it is lost, it feels a little insecure. So again, coming back to what you were saying, it need not be your belief system. This, whether you're an atheist or whether you're religious or whether you're a believer, it does not matter. Ultimately, I would say that even the atheists that I have met, I'm telling you, some of the atheists that I've met, they will say that I'm an atheist, I don't believe in God. And yet, when you gently ask them, I have met some atheists who I feel are even more closer and nearer to God than people who have been going to, who have been worshiping God since they were children. It is because an atheist, in my opinion, is somebody who is skeptical. They may say that we just don't believe in God, but what they are essentially trying to say is that we don't believe in God the way you describe God. And yet when you dig deeper, somewhere within themselves, they have that understanding that there is something beyond me. There is some, you call it a higher power, God, or whatever it might be, that is there. And I believe in that connection. And that is all that it takes. So you need not be a believer. You can be skeptic, and that is perfectly fine. The only thing that is needed is trust. And trust in whom? Not trust in Sam, not trust in anybody else, not trust in God. Trust in yourself. Even if you open up that little trust, if you are willing to trust your, if you're willing to trust yourself, the process works phenomenally well. You don't have to trust in anything external, because everything that there is to know, that truth exists within you. The kingdom of God exists within you. All we are doing is trying to reach out there. As long as the doors are open, as long as you keep the doors open, whatever work has to happen, happens. And it happens beautifully.
Yeah, I like what you say, that you have to trust yourself, right? And we hear that a lot. And I didn't really understand what that meant until I started making contact with what you called earlier, you know, your inner child, right? Or my inner girl, that being, that experience, that dimension of myself as an infant, as a child, you know, so much of that had been suppressed, you know, to survive into my adolescence, into my teenage years, and into adult life. And so when someone would say, you know, trust yourself in this decision, right? You know, you're an adult, and it's like you're wavering, and that lack of clarity, that lack of discernment kind of comes in. And you realize, I don't know how to trust myself. No one ever really taught me, because when I was a child, maybe trusting myself wasn't an option. Maybe I felt that I wasn't supported in building that trust, or listening to my intuition, or listening to my body, or listening to the inner yes or the inner no. I really do believe it's something that we don't often cultivate in children. You know, it's like my body is saying no to this, but my family is telling me I must do it. And so there's a scramble that happens, right? An internal scramble of like, well, I was told not to trust that feeling. So we grow up and we might be a little confused about what it means to trust ourselves. And then we see ourselves, you know, ourselves making decisions based on what the external world wants. And then later feeling unfulfilled, empty, confused, you know, not really following the path that we thought, you know, that we wanted for ourselves. So have you seen in the sessions and in your work where people do have that re-meeting, and then it's like a reinforced sense of trust in self, and they can move forward with more clarity and communication with their own inner yes, inner no, intuition?
In a very practical sense, okay, not from the psychology or something like that, but from a very practical sense within yourself, what would I call as the opposite of trust? So it can be described in 1,000 ways. This just came to me, so I'm just sharing this with you. The opposite of trust within me is when my mind starts to strategize. Why does it strategize? Because it wants to control the situation. Because my mind tells me the story that if I don't control the situation, there will be some pain or suffering. Things will not go my way. Either somebody will take advantage of me, that is on the worst case scenario, or something won't happen the way I want it to. And yet, when your mind is telling you that don't trust, or in other words, it says strategize. The moment you bring in strategy, you're going further and further away from trust. Trust essentially means if you train yourself to listen to the first thing that comes to you. You'll say, Sam, that is impractical. If I start listening to the first thing that comes to me while I'm driving on the road and my, you know, mind says, take a right, and I suddenly make a right, there might be a car crash and all that. Yes, I can understand those arguments. Yet, when we are in this kind of a situation, especially when we are doing a spiritual process, the way we conduct the process, the way we hold space for any client who comes in, for most of the QHD practitioners, we create that kind of a conducive atmosphere where it is non-judgmental. Usually, we are unable to trust because we feel that, you know, if we are our authentic selves, how is the other person going to judge me? And that judgment, that critique is going to be very harsh. So, when you hold yourself, when somebody comes to me, the way I've been holding myself is as much as possible, I hold myself in the center, in my axis. Means what? I refrain from having an opinion whether something is good or something is bad, whether something is right or something is wrong. When we are outside of this situation, or when we are outside of this session, there are moral, legal, ethical, all these religious realities that we have to deal with. We cannot afford, probably, to be 100% authentic. But when we are in this kind of a session, then the more authentic you can be, you are actually trusting yourself. And that is the kind of space energetically that we create in these kind of sessions. Because when that kind of an atmosphere, that space is created, whether you understand energetics or not, automatically you start aligning with your center, and whatever has to happen, you let it happen. You are not doing anything. It is that you are just being in the flow. You are allowing things to happen. It is a weird subjective way of describing this, but I will tell you, most people, even if they come in with a strategy that I'm going to talk about this, and maybe there are a few things that I will not talk about, by the time they come and sit on the couch, their energy itself changes in such a way that very easily they are able to talk about things that they could not even speak with themselves for the last 20, 30 years. And in just speaking that, the energetics, the stories, the emotions, whatever the entanglements were that were holding them back, they start releasing them. And in that release itself, what we call, we can say a lot of karmic baggage, or we can say the trauma, whatever it is, it starts loosening up. And that is how the process works. So, you know, some people, they may be wondering that, but isn't it that when you go under hypnosis, that is when the process? No. The process actually starts the moment you commit yourself to this session. Oh, how can that be? I have not even come into the office. You are not even doing the process. See, this is this whole illusion about time and space. We think that, oh, my session is going to be in 7 days. 7 days is happening here in linear time. Time is not linear. Everything is happening in the here and now. That is why the moment you commit yourself to the process, there are so many people who have told me, the moment they keep the phone down, even after talking with me, something starts settling down within them. It is not my talk or anything. It is just that now they have aligned with that self of them, which is the authentic self. And the moment you are in that, in a way, we can say, you have now started trusting yourself, rather than building more and more walls around you. You have started ignoring those walls or letting go of those walls. And these walls, as you very rightly said, they have been built since we were 6 or 7 years old. When we were 5 or 6, we were our authentic selves. We never cared about society. We didn't know what were morals. We didn't know what's ethics. We didn't know what is to be a good girl or a bad girl. We didn't have any of those problems. It is only when we started growing up that society around us, the most well-intentioned people, started conditioning us, programming us into thinking that, oh, this is how you behave. This is how you fit in the box. And it is the safest to fit in the box. And we had to curb on that authentic self, stop trusting that authentic self, that guidance, that intuition, which was coming to us naturally. Because if we were our natural self, then we saw society punishing us in certain ways. Supposing, you know, you've gone to school. I mean, this happened with my son. He used to be on the math bowl team. And they used to win these math bowls all over Florida. He was one of the brightest kids in math. And yet, every time, every term, his math teacher would call us and say that, you know, your son is not doing well. When we used to ask why, the explanation they used to give us is, when we give your son a problem, He knows the right answer. He writes the right answer. But he is unwilling to give us the in-between steps. School is about making it happen logically. While as this life, there is no step-by-step logically. To him, it was coming intuitively. He looked at the problem, he knew the answer. But school was saying, if you have to come to school, you've got to fit in this box. You have to be able to give it to us step-by-step. I'm not saying that the school is wrong. School is doing what they are meant to do. But this is how we curb ourselves. We stop trusting ourselves. So after a certain while, after hearing probably the teacher say this a dozen times, and we also, at that time, me and I didn't have any sense. So I was trying to tell him, please comply, man, so that I don't have to come to school and listen to your teachers. Somewhere within him, that is where I must have caused the damage. Where I told him, rather than being intuitive, rather than trusting yourself, please just use your left brain. So we do this, but then we realize it a little later on in life. But the moment the realization comes, we are very close to that. And we can turn around. And it is very possible. And I face those challenges daily in my life. Though I tell people 100 times a day, trust, trust, trust. When it comes to my own insecurities, I find it difficult. I remind myself and I keep doing it. And that is the journey of life. Otherwise, it would have been so monotonous if I was trusting, trusting, trusting. I wouldn't have known the other side. So both sides are fine.
A lot of the people that have worked with you have recounted past life experiences. I know that that's a big part of this process. They didn't expect to, you know, maybe some expected it, maybe some didn't access it. And this was one of the points of contention that I actually encountered when discussing this process with someone, because they said, you know, that doesn't exist. You know, that's, again, that's just someone remembering something from a dream. You know, that's the answer that they gave me. However, for me personally, it's so compelling. The stories that I hear and how, like you said, time is not linear. And there's this interconnected web of experiences that are existing in our present moment. And then they're recounted when people go into the regression and access a past life. Even relationships we have in our current life are reflected in past life regressions, you know, and certain experiences we had with those people makes, you know, it helps us make sense of why our dynamic is the way that it is with a person now. And it's such an intricate, beautiful web. And so can you explain really what that, or share what that phenomena is, and perhaps a few experiences that some of your clients have had that you've found to be really compelling?
This term, past life regression, really speaking, technically, what we are doing is not a past life regression. It is a quantum healing hypnosis technique. Yet, because a lot of people have gone and touched past lives, this term, past life regression, has become very common. That is how people understand this process. That is why we call it past life regression. Even when you read Brian Weiss's Many Lives, Many Masters, all the experiences that Catherine went through, they were past lives. And for us, even Edgar Cayce, you know, past lives, or Newton. So most of these accounts that have come out, they have been past lives, so that is why we use this generic term called past life regression. Really speaking, when a person goes under, their higher self decides whether they need to project them to a future life, take them back to a past life, or take them to parallel realities within the same life that they are living right now to disentangle or bring closure or bring healing to certain things that may have happened 20 years ago. They may go back to the life of an animal, a plant, or even a stone. Anything can happen. Please try to understand this thing of time. look at this, okay? I have, think of this as a ball or a tennis ball in my hand. If I ask you, where does this ball begin? You will say, Sam, any point where you put your finger on, that is where the ball begins. And if I ask you, where does it end? You will say, I will go around and come back at the same point. Please understand, time is not linear. Time is like this. And even this that I'm pointing out is only so that our minds, which are used to everything being linear, can try to understand something which is as complex as time. You ask somebody in the spiritual field, they'll say time is, you know, your imagination. You ask somebody else, they will have some other, explanation. Why am I telling you this? Is because if you take any point on the ball, you come back to the same point. Essentially, what it is trying to say is that everything exists in this moment, in the here and now. When we say everything exists in this here and now, everything means what we as human beings think, past, the present, as well as the future, all is present in this one moment or in this here and now. And I'm not generalizing this because this is a little sensitive area. I'm saying that there are just a few who go through this experience. It is not for everyone. That sometimes I have seen that there are some people who will come and they will share this experience with me. They say that, you know, we have talked with therapists, we have talked with our family, nobody can understand this. They say that somehow I feel that I don't belong in this body. And sometimes they are able to articulate that experience in detail, maybe sometimes not. But what happens is, whenever they feel that within themselves, the only thing that logically they feel that they can do to help themselves, because nobody else can understand them and they also cannot understand the experience, is they think that the only way out is by ending their life. Now, you know, they've gone everywhere, they have been on therapy, they have taken all the whatever medication that their doctors have prescribed and nothing is helping. Maybe they sometimes come to me. And when they are regressed, sometimes we see that this may be their first life on this planet. And especially I have seen in the few cases that I have come across, when it is their first life on this planet, if they have come from what we humans call as a future life, and this is their first life on their planet, naturally, adapting to this constraint of this body, these emotions, suffering, pain, all these things are so new and so gross and so limited that they feel compressed as if they've been caged, that they are trying to escape. And the only expression that they can find is by, you know, somehow ending this life. When they connect with that, when their higher self brings in that clarity or whatever, somewhere, I will not be able to logically explain to you what happens, but somewhere within them, they find that stability, they find their center, somewhere there is that recognition or realization that, okay, I chose this. This is not a curse on me that, you know, I've been born as a human in a human body. This is actually a huge privilege. Whatever, wherever I was in the fifth or seventh dimension where there's only bliss, bliss and bliss, it was getting too boring for me. So maybe I chose this spicy life of, you know, this roller coaster ride that human beings go through. And I am here now. And when that happens, there is some kind of a settling within themselves and they are able to then take the next steps and make, you know, align with their life purpose and keep going on. So, both ways, whether it is a past life or a future life or parallel realities, whatever may your higher self may bring to you, sometimes we may logically connect the dots that, oh, because he was my elder brother in the past life, that's why he's behaving like this, or because maybe somebody came from a future life that they are not fitting in their body, so they feel like this. Sometimes we can connect these dots logically.
It just got me thinking about all the ways in which this idea that there is life after life can be very threatening. When we, or there's a force, let's say, that wants to control all of that power, because when we actually believe life after life exists, a lot becomes available to us, you know, and we're not so driven by fear. But it's this kind of, I don't know, maybe dogmatic judgment that there's consequences and punishment to be had that, you know, keeps people in line and keeps them small and keeps them in fear and keeps them behaving a certain way. Because if they know life after life, or they, you know, believe in that in any way, they might be more free to expand, to explore, to manifest, to create, to heal. And so do you think that there's some kind of agenda to really abolish the idea that life after life exists or is possible?
So in one way, this is a very dangerous question. No, the question is not dangerous. The answer is dangerous. So, but still, you know, we will explore it. And I'm sure that whoever is watching this will take it just the way they need to receive it. See, think of it like this, you know, somewhere, whether it is in religion or in spirituality, somewhere they say that we have been created in the likeness of God. We are just like God. Whether you believe a God is a he or she and it, or just energy, whatever it may be, that we are a fractal of God. A fractal means basically everything is the same as God, except in size and maybe in intelligence or whatever, we are a little limited, and what we call as God is infinite. Now, the second thing, and this is the way this is my personal thought, okay? I'm not saying that this is how existentially it is, or if somebody needs to believe this or not. No, please, treat this just like entertainment, because, you know, all of us have our own ideas and we don't like somebody else saying it in a little different way. And yet, I'm just going to share what I feel about God. I feel God is like, just like you, a mother. A mother, now today, because you're a human being, you may have one child, two child, or maybe three, four children. God, because it's infinite, decided to have maybe 7 billion children, because it can keep producing, no problem. It has got enough energy to take care of all of us. When a mother, unless she is in some duress or some problems happening within her, a regular normal mother has one thing that all mothers have, and that is unconditional love. Unconditional means the child is 2 years old, it comes and slaps you, you say, oh, you just laugh at it. The child, you're picking it up, you've just fed it, it burps and it pukes on you, you say, it's okay. Whatever the child does, you treat it with love, kindness, compassion, you know, just unconditionally. The same thing is with God. Now, many religions, I am not pointing fingers at one religion. All religions all over the world have, for some reason, just to be able to see, the modern organized religion is what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about essentially what religion should be, because religion by itself can be a wonderful thing. It is only the modern organized religion that I am right now talking about. Modern organized religion, to control the masses, has created all these morals and ethics and everything. And in that has also created a God who's waiting probably at the gates waiting to judge you, as if that man or woman or whatever that entity is has got no other thing to do except wait out there and judge. And judge whom? Judge a part of himself that he has only created in all the perfection, in divine perfection. If we somewhere believe that we are a creation of God, that means that God with infinite wisdom has created us. Now, if we start saying that that creation has gone wrong and is doing all kinds of nonsense and doing wrong things and all that, you know, in a way we are saying, hey, God up there, I think somewhere you screwed up. That would be the biggest insult which at least I cannot do. And that is why everything is in creation is 100% perfect. So when it is 100% perfect, where does the question of sin, going to hell, going to heaven, somebody being up there judging you, none of that really works. None of that really happens. What people generally refer to as hell or heaven is really speaking the experience that they have created for themselves while they are in this body and mind. So somebody is going through hell or somebody is going through heaven.
You did say something. It was not specifically because we were talking about mothers. You were talking about unconditional love. And, you know, one of the questions I did want to ask you was about consciousness before birth, because in my work of conception, fertility, childbirth, postpartum work, you know, lactation counseling, and there's so many people I've encountered who say that, you know, children don't remember, right? When they're in the womb, they don't remember, they're not conscious yet, and there's no consciousness when they're infants. So whatever we do to them, they're not going to remember. And this comes up a lot when women talk about, you know, more barbaric and violent procedures that we do to children when they're just born. They say, oh, I'll do it. The earlier I do it, the better. Because if I do it when they're older, they might remember. And I say to them, they've been remembering since the moment they were conceived. You know, so in your work, have you seen over the years this to be true, that there is a consciousness when the child is in the womb?
Absolutely, absolutely. See, please understand that there are many, many levels of memory. Okay. The only one which most human beings understand is the conscious memory. So if I can't recollect something that I did when I was in my fourth grade, then we say, oh, it's out. No. Life doesn't work that way. Everything, in fact, see, okay, so this is neuroscience. This is not woo, which is saying that every moment that you're awake, you are taking in 10 million bits of data, out of which your brain is capable of processing anywhere between 30 to 50 bits of data. Where does the rest, 9,000,099, whatever that number is, where does it go? It gets dumped down into your subconscious. So essentially, there's a much, much bigger memory, which we call as the subconscious, which is storing everything that has ever happened to you. Forget just being in the womb. Since you separated as a fractal from consciousness, from God itself, okay, there is everything that you remember, and that is why we call this past life regression. Now, if you ask about just this birth, that when conception happened, when I was in my mother's womb, are there things that I remember? Are there things that shaped me? Absolutely, 100%. And science will very slowly, I think they'll be able to prove this and all that. Just on a little different note, if somebody is interested in seeing as to, forget just when the child is in the womb, how genetic memory, how it comes down from generations. You can just Google on the cherry blossom experiment. I think they conducted it at Emory University or something, where they bred mice, they gave them cherry blossom, then they electrocuted them, they shocked them, and then they let the male and female mice come together and have offsprings. And they were able to see that whatever programming was given to the first generation, it lasted until the fourth generation. That programming carried over from generation to generation. In the Indian culture, we know that that programming carries over to seven generations. Now that is, let us keep that aside. I will tell you a little story, which is very famous from India. It comes from the Gita. I will make it very short and small. So one day, there were these beautiful beings. One's name is Krishna. The other guy is Arjuna and his wife Draupadi. So they were sitting and they were discussing a certain war formation. So Krishna was telling Arjuna how to basically get into that war formation, what strategy to use and how to decimate it and come out of it and all that. It was called Chakravyuha, which is, think of it like a concentric circle. So the enemy forms that formation and then you somehow get into it and you get lost in it and they kill you. So Krishna was telling Arjuna how to basically get into it and all. Now it so happens that while Krishna was telling all this to Arjuna, Draupadi, who is his wife, was pregnant and she had the child. Now Krishna tells Arjuna about this war formation, and as he tells the plan how to get into that concentric circle and reach the center, somebody comes and calls him and says, you're needed out there. Can you please come with us for 5 minutes? So he excuses himself. He goes. So now there is no talk happening. So the wife goes away. She continues with her chores. Then Krishna comes back and tells, okay, now you're in the center. Now I'm going to tell you how to get out of it. What happened was that child in her womb had only heard how to be able to get into it. It had not heard the exit strategy. 20 years later, when there was a big war, his name was Abhimanyu. He was able to get into that war formation. He was able to very successfully get into the middle. But when he went to the center, he did not have that knowledge how to get out. So everything is being recorded. There is nothing that anything that life misses. Just that when you come out, how will it manifest is something that we don't know. Some of the memories might get triggered. Some of them may not get triggered. And that is how it works.
With this in mind, we have to, or it might compel us, I should say, to rethink everything that we take in, everything that we're digesting, right? From music to visuals to energy to food, because people are very concerned with, you know, the food they're putting into their body, yet they spend most of their day inside of an electromagnetic frequency. They're listening to music with lyrics and programming the subconscious. They're picking up the phone and listening to a friend complain for 45 minutes. You know, whatever it is, all of those things are shaping, you know, what I would say is our reality and the actions that we take or the reactions that we take based on that programming. So I would say it's an invitation. And I know that that's, like you said, some people might not like it because then we realize how much power we do have to shape our experience, and we can no longer be in that victim state that feels really easy to be in, because being in the victim state doesn't require a lot of responsibility, right? So if we take that responsibility to be...
It is so convoluted that the very same things that make us become victims, our mind convinces us that if you do those, you will actually be the hero. Means what? I'll give you a simple example. Most people think that they are empowering themselves by listening to the news. I haven't I listen to the news about maybe 10 times in a year. When I'm at the airport or somebody is listening to the news or somebody says something or something like that. And I have been doing this for the last 17 years of my life. And yet, please look at me. I am not in a victim mode. I have not lost money. I'm not on the streets or anything. In fact, my life is flourishing and I'm thriving. People who are suffering any kind of mental, psychological, if they don't have emotional well-being, just by not listening to the news, not reading the news, not entertaining, you know, not looking at it on your laptop or phone or anything like that, you can cut down about 30 to 40% of your symptoms just by not listening to the news. And I'm telling you, unless you're some stockbroker who has to rely on the news for their, you know, making their money, just regular people like you and me, if the news has to reach you, if some calamity is happening, some building is falling down, something is happening, some friend, some relative, somebody will bring it to your attention, you will exercise the necessary caution, whatever precaution you need to take, and life will go on. It will work very well. And news is just one bit. There are so many other things that you mentioned. The food that we put in, the music that we take, the clothes that we wear, the colors that we, they're saying, everything. Anything and everything. You see, you take simple example. You go to the hospital. They paint the walls light green. Why? Because they want to make you calm. Imagine if those walls were painted in bright red. How it would excite you and it would make you go crazy. Then they would have to work double just to bring down your blood pressure first and then take care of you. So like that, every input that comes through these five senses is affecting you. Whether you're conscious of it or not, doesn't matter. Subconsciously, everything is shaping you. So the more aware you are as to what you take in through these five senses will determine how life goes for you. For some people, it seems to be very easy because they are maybe making the right choices as to what they take in. For some people, though they have everything, life always seems difficult. Roller coaster ride. So, life just works the way you respond to it. And by response, it simply means taking the responsibility, the ability to respond. Do I want this within me? If I'm going to watch an action movie on which people are killing and raping and doing all those kind of things, now it has been taken into my subconscious. There is no escaping. It will find its manifestation some way or the other. It will come up, whether subtly or overtly. It doesn't matter. Whatever you make a part of you, it find expression. That is why they say, you know, I think nowadays nobody must be saying this, but 20, 30 years ago, I think they used to say this, that you are what you eat. They used to think that, oh, if you eat potatoes, you'll look like a potato. That is different. But everything that you eat, even the water that you drink traumatized water. Now you're taking in that memory. You drink water, which you have blessed or structured it in a certain way. Now you take that. And it will do some wonders for you. Not all water is the same. And if we can say that about water, then everything that we put in this mouth contains water. And water has tremendous memory. So all the foods that come to us in some way or the other are carrying memory. So what we choose to put in here will affect our lives. There is no doubt about it. You are absolutely right.
Oh, Sam, thank you so much for all of this knowledge and wisdom and this conversation. I truly love what you do and what you share. And I had such a profound experience myself that is still continuing to unfold. The clarity that it brought has really opened up a lot of new avenues, you know, which feed that desire for new experience. And, you know, I really feel personally that's what I'm here to do, is that polishing of the heart and the expansion through all the experience and the alchemy that becomes available to me when I can transform what was once suffering into this gift or this purpose or this new thing, you know. And so I really do live for that alchemy. And you've been an incredible teacher, you know, along that journey for me. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for allowing yourself to experience the alchemy. And in one way, it is beautiful that you described it as alchemy. But in another way, that experience should become more and more that one day you feel that, oh, everything is an alchemy. And everything is profound. And every moment I'm transforming. And that happens when you bring in consciousness. The moment consciousness comes from a moment-to-moment basis, you can find this magic, this alchemy happening literally in every moment. It is just that, unfortunately, we have chosen to kind of sleep it off while the magic is happening. But I hope that, you know, with this talk of ours, it provokes some mindfulness, and through which people can become even more conscious and make this magic happen in their life.
I hope so too. Thank you, Sam.